and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff, and today we have a very special guest. I've known this lady for a very, very long time. Actually, if you've been onto beernutsproductions.com, you would have seen her do quite a few little movie roles in our productions and also some voiceover work as well. She is a multi-skilled lady. We're going to learn all about it. It's Katarina Heppard. How are you, Katarina?
I'm great. Thanks, Goff.
Now, you have been doing this for a very, very long time. Is this something like, as in, you write, you produce, you direct, you teach, you act? There's not much you don't do. You're obviously a very creative lady. Is this something that you had when you were a little kid? Like, were you always creative as a little kid?
Yes, I pretty much started doing all of this when I was about 8 years old. Had my first professional gig when I was eight, which was amazing, and then it was
doing
that was
what?
It.
What were you doing?
I got a gig in the Queensland Ballet, and I got a role because I lived in Maryborough. I grew up in Maryborough in Queensland, and there wasn't a whole lot of professional work in Maryborough, but the ballet and the different groups would come, and then they would use community groups or kids in roles and things like that. And I was doing ballet with my dance teacher, and they were looking for a couple of kids to be in a particular ballet, and I ended up getting the gig, which was very cool. So that was kind of the first real professional stage thing that I did. I'd done a Stedfords and plays and things like that, you know, school plays and stuff, but that was kind of my first, this is what I want to do. Not ballet, necessarily.
Just being on stage?
Because, you know, I'm not really a ballerina, but I was okay when I was eight. Yeah, and just being on stage. So from then on, it was pretty much go, go, go. And as soon as I left school, I went to uni. And from uni, I toured. And then from touring, I went back to uni and did another degree and got my education degree as well and directing. And then ended up working again in a number of different organisations. And I've toured quite a bit. I've worked in opera, I've worked in radio, I've worked on film and TV, I've worked in musical theatre, I've worked in theatre. So I kind of...
There's no need to show off, Katarina.
I know, right? It's like, oh, here you go, all of my credentials. Everything out for the world to see. I just kind of like when I go through the list and I go, oh, yeah, I did that. So I've been really fortunate in a couple of ways because... About five or six years ago, Melbourne Theatre Company were running a women in theatre directors course or program, and they accepted like 10 directors, and I was one of the 10 directors that was accepted. And so for a year I was kind of immersed in Melbourne Theatre Company, learning how to run a major theatre company, all of the ins and outs, seeing all of their shows, getting to sit on rehearsals, having all of this amazing professional development stuff.
Wow, that would have been very cool.
It was a pretty cool year. And, I've had some really nice things happen which have been really exciting. So that was one of my big things that I always kind of go, that was a great year. That was a really good year.
Of course, every time you've been in a Beer Nuts production.
Oh, listen, that tops my year, mate. It's like every year it's just one scale above, you know.
That's the correct answer.
It's always fun working with you, Goff. Like, can't go wrong with doing a Beer Nuts production. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, you're efficient. If nothing else, you get the job done, buddy. It's like, yep, we're doing this, done. Okay, see ya. Oh, okay, quick. That was good.
Yeah, there's no mucking around with me.
No, mate. No.
So going back to you as a kid, who was it that encouraged you? Like, who was the number one, like, was it a family member, a teacher? Like, who was it that really sort of said, hey, Kat, you're good at this. Let's do more. Who was it that really pushed you? Well, not necessarily push, that's the wrong word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, somebody who encouraged me most. I think it was, like, my mum kind of got me into speech and drama originally, but I have two sisters and all three of us did it.
Okay.
And I think I was the only one who kind of, like, grabbed it and ran with it. The other two kind of liked it but weren't overly interested in it. And I think my parents were always of the mind of do whatever makes you happiest. So if I enjoyed something, it was always go for it, just keep going until you don't want to do that anymore. But also both of my parents were of the mind of don't quit something until you've given it a really, really good go. So if I signed up for something, I had to do it for at least a year or two. And then I was allowed to make a decision about whether or not I wanted to quit. If I absolutely hated it or if something was terrible, then I would step away from it. But pretty much that's kind of where it came from.
Were they creative people as well, your parents?
My dad was a pretty amazing creative person. He didn't want to be in the limelight. He was an opera singer.
Okay.
And he came from Italy and he was a tenor and he trained with one of the, I don't know, I can't remember her name, but when he first came to Australia, he went to, I think it was Wagga Wagga, and he trained with one of Australia's top opera singing trainers. And he spent a couple of years working with her, and then they were trying to encourage him to, you know, join one of the opera companies. And he was like, oh, no, I just don't want to sing for myself.
Oh, wow. Okay. Fair enough. Well, I suppose everyone's got their own motivations, don't they? So, yeah, no, that's interesting. Mm. And what about your mum? Was she not...
My mum's a sewer. My mum was always sewing and creating.
That's a creative thing.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess in a way, and she was always doing things like, you know, cross stitch and always working with her hands and creating something artistic in that way.
So you've come from a pretty artistic sort of background in that case. Yeah,
I guess so. Neither of them were really on stage, but...
Well, art is art. It comes in all sorts of...
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, very cool. Now, something that you do, which obviously I really love and admire a lot, is you actually run a theatre group and workshops for people with disabilities. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Indelibility Arts is what it's called. It started about 5 years ago.
So do you want to give the website address in case I forget to ask you?
Yeah, sure. It's www. Dot, and I'm going to spell it for you because it's a bit weird. INDEL and then ABILITY. Arts, ARTS.com. So Indelibility Arts, all one word, all smalls, .com.
And what's it all about?
About 5 years ago, my business partner, Beck Alexander, and I were sort of chatting about that there was this gap that we felt was in the industry, and we'd both sort of worked with a number of people with disabilities, and we both worked in the education sector in disability as well. And had noticed that once people left school, there wasn't really an outlet for them to explore the career as the arts as a career. And we kind of did a bit of research, and Queensland was really lacking in that particular area. And Beck had been working overseas, and she'd been working in a school that took the kids to the Globe, and they were performing on stage with, you know, people from the Royal Shakespearean Theatre Company, and all of that sort of stuff. And we had nothing here in Queensland. And we thought, well, why don't we just see? We'll put the feelers out to a few people that we knew who were artists with disability. And we had a conversation with them and said, what do you think if we tried to get this off the ground? What do you think? We're going to apply for a grant. What do you reckon? And they all went, oh, yeah. So we applied for a grant. And 5 years later, here we are. And we're still going strong. And we've built up our workshop series. We run... three really solid workshop series now across Brisbane, plus we have five individual students, private students who come to us on a weekly basis, and we're building up our next group workshop next year. We're looking at working with Technicolor Theatre Company here on the Gold Coast, actually. We were going to work with them this year, but, you know, 2020, something weird happened in 2020. I just don't know what it was, but something strange really happened. I don't want to talk about it. But, you know, everyone knows. So weird stuff happened and things didn't go ahead. And so we're looking at 2021 for that. So, and we're also touring our children's show. We wrote this, Karen, who's one of our ensemble members, wrote this book about 20 years ago called We'll Be the Optical Whale. And it's this gorgeous story about a whale who needs glasses. Mm-hmm. And if he takes them off, he can't see, and he completely destroys everything by, you know, flapping around and his tail, and because he's so big, he's a whale. And he gets bullied. He has a best friend whose name is Cecil the Shark. So Cecil and Wilbur are BFFs, and they get bullied by a gang of starfish meanies. And they are starfish meanies who rap. So we've got these rapping starfish meanies who bully a whale and a shark, of all things. And eventually it all comes out in the wash. And it turns out that the leader of the starfish meanie gang was also bullied when they were little. And so they just kind of thought that that's what you did and didn't realise that bullying wasn't the way to go and that there were other ways of connecting with people. And the whole show has this beautiful moral of accepting difference and all of those sorts of things. But it's a really beautiful digital work, and it has integrated Auslan as well.
Okay, cool.
So instead of having an interpreter on stage, they're integrated into the digital design, and it's really lovely. So, yes, it's that's Wilbur, and we've done two other shows in the 5 years. So we've created a cabaret and a show about mental health for young people.
Okay, very cool. And for those overseas who aren't sure, Auslan being the Australian Sign Language, of course.
So that's correct.
Yeah. Now, why is it important for people with a disability to be integrated in, well, not integrated, but to be involved in the arts? What sort of benefits have you seen from the people that you've worked with?
I think it's just that everybody has a right to be part of the community. Like, just because you may have a disability, it doesn't mean that you don't have the skills or the talent that we should showcase. You're part of this community. I think our world is getting very smart in the sense of we're not interested in seeing whitewashed, you know, shows with people who are all exactly the same height, the same shape, the same look, the same everything. We're interested in seeing our communities represented accurately, either on stage or in film or in podcasts or in whatever. We're very interested in looking at our communities and having that accurate representation on stage or wherever. And so that's kind of one of the things that we're pushing for, is saying that, you know, we may need to be a little bit flexible because people may get a little bit tired or may need a little bit of more time with something, but they still can produce the same results, and we just have to look at how we support that. And so I think it's really important that we have that correct, that accurate representation and that sort of cross-section of community represented in our works.
And on the flip side, I would imagine the folks out there with disabilities that work in your work, well, that participate in your shows and workshops, you'd see them sort of blossom and grow, and they improve as individuals almost.
Absolutely. A couple of them have sort of said, you know, like, we're family now. You know, they talk about us as being family. We are a big part of their lives, and we've given them an opportunity to showcase skills and talents that no one else has before. But also, we've got a couple of people in our ensemble, a couple of the artists in our ensemble, who are very interested in leadership roles. So Beck and I are currently working on a leadership transition program so that some of our artists with disability will end up being supported in leadership roles and manage the company with us, alongside us. So they currently, you know, plan what shows we do, and the ideas come from them. So we help do all of that, but basically this will be a bit more of a leadership role within the company. And you're right, there's a sense of value,
yep,
and a sense of ownership,
yep,
and a sense of pride and skill development. Like, we train them up as actors as well, so, you know, they get skills-based training on the job. So there's so much growth, but also I think it's confidence and self-esteem as well.
It's amazing what being included can do for, yep, somebody. No, 100%. I'm with you 100%. That's why I really enjoy what you do with that. I think it's a really neat thing that you do, and it's you and Beck should be commended. I think it's really, really cool. So the best of luck with that in the future, truly. So, but going back onto you and your career, though, Kat, what advice, because obviously you've been doing this for so long and you do teach as well, what sort of advice would you give to young creatives out there who are just, you know, they're just starting out and they're not sure where to go and how to go about it? What sort of advice would you give them?
There's a couple of things. I think it's important to do as much as you possibly can. So to get your hands into as many things as you possibly can, be very careful that you don't get taken for granted or taken advantage of. So, you know, it's good to do a few jobs for nothing, but don't do that forever.
Mm-hmm.
But experience is always valuable. So if you've never done something before, go in and volunteer and get the experience and build it up that way. I think working with as many people or as many organisations as you possibly can, learn from as many different people as you possibly can, because there's so much to learn in our industry. And don't think that you know everything, because you don't. I still don't. I work with so many people all the time and learn something from everyone all the time. And I think that's one of the most valuable things about what we do, is that things change all the time and we learn all the time. And I think it's really lovely to just kind of get out there, do as much as you can. Trust your gut. That's my biggest kind of piece of advice. If your gut says to you, this doesn't feel right, don't do it.
And I suppose going back to a point you made at the beginning of the answer was a lot of younger folks, I suppose, well, I suppose anybody, it could be anybody, but finding good representation, a good manager, I think is really, really important for any, especially actors, obviously, but singers as well. But how would you, what would be some sort of red flags, you know, for those who are sort of looking at different agents? What are a few red flags so that they know to get reputable representation?
That's a really great question. I get it asked all the time of me. My advice to everyone is always choose three different agencies to go and talk to. You'll get a different kind of feel from each one. If you feel that this is someone you can have a relationship with, you know, a really good working relationship with, again, trust your gut. You'll feel it. You'll know. If they say to you, oh, it's going to cost you $1,000 to do this, and then you have to do this course and you have to do this course, say, thank you very much. I'll take all that information with me and I'll never come back.
Should they say it as sarcastically as you did?
Oh, probably not. Be really nice. No. I don't know. Was that sarcasm, was it? I couldn't help myself.
Don't get me wrong. I liked it.
But it is. It's that thing of going, warning bells are, if someone asks you for a lot of money just to sign you up, then that should be a bit of a red flag. The things that you should sign up for are things like Showcast, those sorts of websites that really are active in getting people jobs, where your agent is going through those sites to put you forward to different casting directors for gigs. So talk to your agent, talk to your potential agent about what casting sites they expect you to be on. You don't have to have the premium package for all of those. You can have the minimum package. It's basically headshots and your bio and your CV. If you've got a showreel, great, pop that on there. It's good to have a showreel, but when you're starting out, it's very difficult to say, oh, yes, I've got a showreel when you haven't worked. So, you know, build that up over time as well. And I think keep training. Always keep training.
Keep learning, yeah?
Yep.
No, very cool. And so obviously, like I said at the start, you've actually done quite a bit of work for Beer Nuts Productions over the time. Now, obviously, we do things very differently for a number of reasons. Obviously, my disability being one, you know, the smallness of our budgets and all that sort of stuff. What's it been like working for Beer Nuts and the different projects you've been involved in?
Oh, gosh, I think I say this all the time. I say I actually really enjoy working with you, just simply because it's really nice to have somebody who has no question about your skill and your ability, who just comes straight to you and goes, I would like to work with you because I know what you like, I love your work, blah, blah, blah. So that's one of the things that I really like about you, the fact that you respect the people that you work with. You have a lot of respect for the people that you've worked with before, and you quite often repeat that and work with people again. And if you work well with them, you're generally guaranteed to come back and work. Like I said, I think you're extremely efficient. You don't waste time. But I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think it's great to be able to go on set and, you know, you have five scenes to do and you knock them over in a couple of hours. I mean, sometimes it'd be great to be able to kind of redo stuff. But I think everybody understands that it's a low budget and you don't expect to be able to watch the rushes and be able to go, oh, well, I really want to redo that. Oh, please, please, please. We all accept that there might be shots that we aren't 100% happy with, but you're the director. If you're 100% happy with them, then we have to trust that. And I think it goes both ways. You trust us, we have to trust you. I think that your writing is incredibly quirky. There are things that I kind of read and go, oh, what? And then there are things that I read that I laugh out loud and just think that's really clever, really fun. And quite often, not quite often, I think once or twice I've rung you and gone, okay, I am interested, but can you please explain what this one's about? And then once you do, I go, oh, okay, right, that's the feel of it. Got it. I thought that might be it, but, yeah, I wasn't sure. So, I think the big thing is that trust and that relationship that we've built over many, many years. And I met you years ago when you were looking at making a feature film.
That's right.
And you know, I think that was heartbreaking for both of us that didn't come off.
But, absolutely.
But, you know, we there was a, you know, you saw something in me way back then, and since then we've worked together quite a lot. So yes. It's been really lovely to have that and to see you keep working and not kind of get knocked down and not get up again. And I think that's really commendable as well and applaudable, you know, because it's hard to kind of pick yourself up and go, right, well, I'm just going to do this myself and I'm going to pay people. And I think that's really amazing too, because there's so often people will say, well, can you do this for me for nothing? And it's like, okay, I'm happy to do it once or twice, but not every time.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the lovely things about you is you always go, I know I can't pay you, you know, proper rates, but I'm paying you a fee and here's your fee.
Yeah.
And I think that's a respect thing, and I think that's incredibly wonderful from an artist's perspective.
Well, I appreciate that. I would never ask anybody. See, this is probably one thing that you and I disagree on. When earlier you said to, you know, what some of your advice being for folks to maybe do one or two things for free. I don't like that, because I think it can, then you can get suckered in really, really quickly. And I've seen a lot of actors with agents, and, you know, the agent have sent them out and they've worked for free, and the agent then knows, oh, this guy's a sucker, he'll just work for free every time.
Mm.
So I always sort of tell every actor, even if you get paid $1.50, just make sure you get something. Just so people know that you need to be respected.
Yeah, I think the one kind of, I guess, exception to that rule is student films.
Okay, yes.
You know, because I reckon it's really important for students to have good actors work with them.
Yeah, fickle.
Because, you know, if you've got someone really talented working with you, it pushes you harder and it makes you up your game, and it brings, and then I think that develops our filmmakers and our writers and our creatives, our directors, all of those people. So I think from that perspective, I don't mind doing the occasional student film.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think it helps both sides, and it also helps me update my show reel, you know, from year to year too sometimes. So, but I agree with you. I don't think you should work for nothing. I don't believe in working for nothing, and I don't think anyone really should. But I think when you're first starting out, sometimes it's nice to be able to just kind of put your hand up and go, I'll come in and volunteer for one gig and just see how things work.
Yeah.
Or ask to be on set
to
observe, you know.
Mm. Now, going back to me, because it's all about me.
Yep.
it's always about me.
It is.
My having a disability like I do, being blind, obviously it makes, I would imagine the first few times we worked together, the very first time we worked together on set, were you a bit like, I wonder how this is going to work? A blind dude, how's this actually going to happen? And because obviously I'm aware that I do things very differently to normal filmmakers, I know that, but it works for me, and I always love my end product, otherwise it wouldn't be going up on the website. So I'm just curious as to your thoughts before, during and after just working with someone who can't see.
I don't think I've ever really, like, honestly, I don't think I've ever really thought about you not being able to create something because you're blind. I don't know, maybe that's just me.
That's probably the right answer, to be honest.
But I just don't think, I guess I don't think like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of why I started the company too, with Beck.
Yeah.
But I also, you know, like, I'd had conversations with you. I knew you knew what you were talking about. So there was no cause for alarm or cause for concern for me at all. So I guess that just didn't ever come up in my brain.
That's a good thing. I take that as a compliment. So
great.
Where can people find you? If they want to know more about Katarina Hebbard, where can they go and learn a bit more about you?
Oh, I don't have a website. I'm one of those odd humans that does not have a website. But you can find out about me through, just Google me. Actually, there's a bit on there apparently. but Indelibility Arts, you can find out about me there. But also if you just put my name into Google, Katarina Hebbard, Katarina. My surname is Hebbard, Hebbard. There's quite a bit that kind of comes up, and a lot of it's about Indelibility Arts, but once you get through that, there's stuff on Queensland Theatre Company, Opera Queensland, radio, TV, all the sorts of things that I've done. So,
and you love what you do, Katarina. I know that for a fact, because we've discussed that previous. You're going to keep ploughing on until the day you drop, pretty much? This is Katarina Hebbard all the way?
I think so. I think this year has given me pause.
Yeah.
I think, like a lot of people, I kind of stopped and wondered, had time to think about what I was doing and the merry-go-round that I get on every year. And to reflect on that. But I also pretty much hit the ground running when it all happened. I was directing a show on Zoom 2 days after it shut down. I had no choice because I was supposed to be directing a show at QUT with the second years, and I was on Zoom for 6 weeks. So I was probably one of the first people kind of doing that.
How was that, by the way? I assume that would have been really, really difficult because when I direct actors, you know, I'm obviously, I don't know if it's a disability thing or not, but I'm obviously kind of in your face a little bit, and I don't know that I'd be able to do it so well over Zoom, to be honest.
I honestly don't think it's got anything to do with disability either. I think, you know, like working in with actors, I'm the same, Gough. I'm in there because you have to feel it. It's got to be tangible,
yes.
I think.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Zoom was very different. I had to look at it very, very differently. And so I had to shift my brain and kind of work with my actors and get them on the same page as me. So I did a lot of individual work with actors and I did a lot of character study and I did a lot of play in that world to help them develop their characters and help them feel like they had some kind of connection to me and to the character. Mm-hmm. But then I also did a lot of dual improvisations between characters so that they really built up those connections. It was a really tricky time, but I think the result was really lovely and I was very proud of where they came from because all of this sort of hit them like a ton of bricks. And then a lot of them jumped on planes and went home because they didn't know when they were going to see families again. So not only were we doing it on Zoom, but I was doing it, you know, with students who were in Western Australia and, you know, Sydney, Melbourne, Newcastle, North Queensland, all over the place. And so, you know, I had people who were 2 or 3 hours behind or ahead or, you know.
Got to get your maths right. Yeah.
I tell you, I was like, what? Oh, you if I do a 9 o'clock call in the morning, it's 6 a.m. for you. That's not very fair, is it? Probably shouldn't do that to you. but it was really interesting. But I agree with you. There's nothing like live theatre or live work.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, look, we've gone way over time, but thank you so much, Kat, for coming in. I really do appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And ladies and gentlemen, that has been the Beer Nuts Productions podcast for this week. Remember to like, subscribe, follow and share and leave a nice comment, obviously, on the platforms that you're listening to this on. And obviously, beernutsproductions.com for all your entertainment needs. And obviously, Kat's been in a few of our films, so I believe How to Treat Women and the Melanie Holden interview as a couple, and obviously a few voiceover jobs as well that you can find Katarina in as well. So obviously beernutsproductions.com and you can see this incredible actress in action and obviously watch all of our other hilarious content. So that's the episode for this week. Thank you for listening and we'll talk to you next time.